Welcome to the great debate, Communism versus Freedom, no debate at all. When William Cashton, leader of the Communist Party of Canada, publicly debated Freedom Party President Robert Metz on the Wayne McLean Hotline program on June 20, 1986, the open line switchboard was fully lit from the outset of southwestern Ontario's highest rated talk show. The central theme of the debate was communism versus capitalism, though much of the discussion's focus was on the issue of free trade, since Cashton was in London on an anti-free trade crusade. In true communist fashion, Cashton's tactics revolved around evasion, denial, name-calling, and a show of contempt for anyone who disagreed with his viewpoint, which included virtually every caller to the program during the two-hour debate.
This is your direct access to London information and opinion. Radio 98's Hotline with Wayne McLean.
Good morning, and thank you very much for joining us. Today is Friday, June the 20th. This morning on the Hotline, the leader of the Communist Party of Canada and the leader, or at least I should say, the president of the Freedom Party of Ontario. Two gentlemen with entirely different points of view. We've called it, for the sake of something better, the right versus the left, politically speaking. Now, this is the first time that I've had the opportunity to talk with William Cashton, who is the leader of the Communist Party. And if I may call you Bill, if that's okay.
Yes,
welcome to our program. You've been leader of the Communist Party. Actually, you're the general secretary of the party for many, many years. How long has that been?
Since 1965.
Well, we're looking at 20 odd years you've been the leader.
Right.
We're going to talk this morning about the Communist Party and what you believe in. We're also going to talk about another important subject as well, and maybe other issues will come up, I'm sure. Issues like free trade, the arms race, maybe some domestic issues such as pornography, the power of the police and what have you. And I'd also like to welcome to the show Bob Metz, who's been a guest before on the program and is a regular caller to the program. He's president of the Freedom Party here in Ontario. Bob, good to see you again.
Good morning, Wayne. It's nice to be on the other side of the hotline.
As opposed to being on the side where you're holding the phone in your hand.
That's right.
Bob, how long has the Freedom Party been around?
2 years complete. We're in our third year right now. We were formed on January 1st, 1984, and that's when we officially came into existence.
Now, this Freedom Party, though, has its roots going back to the Libertarians, if I'm not mistaken. Is that true?
Only insofar as the official registration was obtained. We are not Libertarians. I am not a Libertarian. I want to make that clear from the outset. I'm not a fascist. I'm not a communist. I'm not any of the things that people would most like to identify me with. I call myself a laissez-faire capitalist.
And what does laissez-faire capitalism mean for the sake of people who may not know?
In essence, it stands for the type of thing that Freedom Party would like to see, the type of society we espouse, and that is a society in which all relationships are based on the principle of consent, where everything that people do is essentially done in the spirit of voluntarism, and where force and coercion are banned from human relationships. That is what a free society is all about.
Okay, let me get Mr. Cashton back in on this now, because I'd like to get some points of view on the air from him and the Communist Party. He says he's a laissez-faire capitalist, I guess a free enterpriser, free marketplace, that sort of thing. Now, what does the Communist Party in this country believe as far as capitalism is concerned, as far as private enterprise is concerned? What are some of the points that you hold out as the leader of this party?
Well, we believe that capitalism is on its dying feet. And historically, on a world scale, that is the truth, and one can see it. Even a rich country and a powerful country like the United States is facing great difficulties. And while superficially it seems to be moving forward, in fact, it's now on the eve of another deep crisis, in my view, economic crisis. And all the aims that President Reagan set, based on the so-called Friedman monetarist theories, or supply-side economics, have failed to work, and will fail to work, because it goes contrary to the laws of development of capitalism. We don't offer for that approach because it is not a workable approach. We think capitalism is unable to solve the basic problems of the people. We can see that in our own country where while we have a so-called recovery, there is growing unemployment or relatively high unemployment where young people have limited futures, if at all, and where poverty is growing while the strength of the wealth is in the hands of fewer and fewer people as increasingly apparent. Mass unemployment and mass poverty now typify the way in which capitalism works, and that's why there is growing criticism and opposition to it.
Okay, you're against capitalism, and that's no surprise to anybody, obviously. What do you want to replace that system with, the economic system here in Canada? What do you offer that's better, that would eliminate much of the disparity and the poverty and the unemployment, too, that you talk about, Bill?
Well, we see the process has taken place in our country in a twofold way. First, the need of the Canadian people to assert the independence of our country, to free itself of domination by the United States, of the multinational corporations in the United States, to develop its policies independently, both in regards to the economy, with respect to foreign policy, and with respect to culture. We call for a binational democratic Canadian culture. We think this is an inevitable stage that the country has to go through on the way towards a socialist system of society which we work for.
Okay.
But the stage at this time is what I mentioned before, the need to assert, to strengthen, to reinforce the independence of Canada.
Okay, that you feel in itself would go a long way to cure the what you call the mass poverty and the mass unemployment.
Yes, if it were.
So is it the United States' fault that this is happening to us?
Well, and it is a part of the fault, not the only fault.
Yeah.
Internally, there are other faults, and that has to do with monopoly control of the Canadian economy. That is why we combine what I said earlier with the necessity of measures to undertake public ownership or nationalization.
Yeah, of
key
all,
sec-
of
first
all
of all,
industry?
First of all, of the United States branch plants in Canada,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Of the banks, and natural resources, so that we would have the key links, or the government, or the people would have the key links with which to develop the economy in a different direction than what it is moving towards at the present time.
Okay. Bob Metz from the Freedom Party. Back to you. What do you think about this idea, first of all, of nationalizing or taking over the American branch plants? That'd be a pretty good thing. I mean, a lot of people say that these branch plants are operating at the whim of the American parent company, and when they do decide to close, a lot of Canadians lose jobs. What do you think about nationalizing them? And Bill talks about taking over the banks, too. How do you see that?
Well, obviously, I'm totally disapprove of the whole thing. I think it's a terrible thing to say. Isn't it interesting that all the things that Mr. Cashton has mentioned this morning, from our economic independence to the cultural independence to complaints about the domination of the U.S. economy, U.S. monopoly control, nationalization, haven't we heard this somewhere before?
Where have we heard it before?
From the other three major parties. To some degree, they accept a lot of the premises that Mr. Cashin has put forth today, and they are wrong in their intent. And I think to get my point across, the first thing we've got to do is get rid of all the crap. Let's get rid of these words, socialism, capitalism, and everything for now, and let's talk about what we're talking about. Free trade, for example, is an excellent starting point. It is the issue of our time. All of life is based on trade. Your purpose in life is to trade and exchange values with other people, whether those values are ideas, whether it contributes to your personality, to your well-being, to your health, or to your material well-being. Trade is the center and the essence of all life. And basically, the issue we're talking about here today is very simple. Let's talk about individuals. You see, collectivist philosophies, which are held...
What is collectivist philosophy?
I'm defining it right off the bat. In which the individual is subservient to some collective. Whatever that collective is up to the person who's forcing the individual to be subservient. But let us say the collective is the state, or the worker, or some other identified group of people. That is the essence of a collective philosophy or a collectivist philosophy. We, on the other hand, hold to an individualist philosophy. We think the individual is the basic component in a society, and that any society composed of individuals should be designed to accommodate them.
Okay, can we cut to the chase here?
Okay.
I want to find out what you think about Mr. Kashdan's comments about capitalism, that it is failing us, and I think it's sort of in the final death throes, he seems to feel. And I want to find out how you feel about nationalizing American factories here in this country and the banks, for instance. Can you really give me specific stuff on that, please, Bob?
Well, let's begin. You went back to the thing, the label again, capitalism. What is it? What is in its death throes? I agree that our freedom to choose the relationships that we want to choose for ourselves is in its death throes. That's what capitalism is. Free trade, for example, is a matter of where you and I, let's say you, Wayne McLean, and I, Bob Metz, we decide that one of us has a product, the other has the money to purchase it. We come to a mutual voluntary agreement and we say, yes, I'll exchange your product for something that I have in return. That's basically what free trade is about. All other systems say that someone else can tell you and I what we can trade between each other, what the terms of those agreements will be. And when someone else, besides the individual responsible for his own life, is guiding that life, things are bound to go wrong. And I regret to say it, but everything that Mr. Kashdan blames on the capitalist system, I would put the blame on socialism and those socialist elements in our society that create the pressures that he's talking about. But let's do away with those labels. Let's talk about our basic freedom to choose the people with whom we want to talk. After all, this is a free trade and exchange of ideas that we're having here on your show this morning. In a controlled society, this might not exist.
Do you think that if Mr. Kashdan's party were elected, it would become a controlled society?
Why don't you ask Mr. Kashdan?
Sir?
Well,
controlled society.
We don't opt to become the government because we don't think that is the issue at this point of time. What we call for is a government or a coalition government around an agreed program that would strengthen the independence of Canada. We think this is the stage that Canada must go through. And that once that is achieved, then the Canadian public will decide, should we go beyond that? Should we undertake further measures that would buttress this independence? Because leaving it to the capitalist class, as events show, is no guarantee of Canadian independence. Individuals, banks, corporations are prepared to sell out Canada whenever there's profit elsewhere, and we see that every day. So the assurance of genuine Canadian independence if the people have control, and we think that the program we opt for and propose, the coalition of various forces who think that is the essential way forward, is to assure that Canadian independence can be buttressed by policies that would make it possible. I do not agree with the remarks made that my statement coincides with the views of other parties in Canada. I wish it were so. Then we would be much closer to solving problems that are still on Canada's agenda and on Canada's doorstep.
A little bit more on that point. About you're saying that these people are similar to the Tories, the NDP, and the Liberals.
Well, let's face it. Freedom of trade begins at home. Today, on the front page of the London Free Press, I see a headline saying that doctors are going to have their right to determine their own salaries, or at least to ask for those salaries on a market, taken away from them. We see landlords in this province who are having their right to their own property, mind you, taken away from them. They can't ask the price that they want. We see our federal government embarking on grand schemes of censorship, taking away our right to freedom of expression. This is happening on a grand scale.
With the pornography thing.
Not only that. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. We're talking everything from rock music to political literature, and make no mistake about it. This is happening today. There's no such thing as it can't happen in Canada, or the European experience or world experience can't happen here. Mm. It happens anywhere that people follow policies where some are allowed to control the lives of others.
Okay, so what you're saying then is we see this with the major parties moving in these areas.
Most definitely.
And therefore, because of that, Mr. Kashdan's party, you feel is like those because those parties are doing these things?
No.
You think he would too?
No, I'm saying that in basic philosophic premises, they have a common ideology in many, many respects. I'm not saying they're all to the same absolute degree, because that is a central factor in this issue. There is a relative degree. That's the only thing that's different between the other parties, but they are all control-oriented parties. And let's face it, to another relative degree, the public wants this to some extent, thinking that by giving up a little bit of its freedom, it can benefit some other way through getting some kind of free service or whatever. But it never works that way. Never shown that.
I want to open our phone lines now for reaction, and I'm glad that you've stayed with me so far because you've had a chance to hear William Cashdan on a couple of points from the Communist Party of Canada, and you've had a chance to listen to some of the points that Bob Metz has made from the Freedom Party. And as you can see, there are points of view that are entirely different. We'd like to open our phone lines up now to you. As far as Bob Metz and the Freedom Party is concerned, we get the idea that the major parties are operating under socialist principles to one degree or another. And, of course, in this country, as in many Western democracies, we have a pretty big government, both at the federal level and the provincial level and the municipal level. So as far as Bob Metz and the position he puts forth, do you agree that big government, government that seems to be taking over more and more of our lives, is the thing to be fought? How do you feel? 433-3121. Do we need a Communist Party in Canada is another question, if you would like to answer that. Would you ever vote for either a Freedom Party candidate or a Communist Party candidate? If you're calling outside the London area, please call Collect. We'll be happy to pay for it. It's going to be a fascinating morning because we're going to get into other subjects as well with both of my guests, and I think the contrast is the thing that we have to underline here. Let's go to the phones, find out what kind of reaction so far from our callers to what each of you gentlemen have had to say this morning. Radio 98, Bob, you're first.
I'm going to direct most of my statement towards the leader of the Communist Party, Bob Cashdan.
It's Bill Cashdan, first of all.
Bill Cashdan?
Yes, go ahead.
I don't understand how anybody who has sat and watched for the length of time this gentleman has and does not understand that the Communist Party, their final goal is total world domination. They totally suppress electronic and paper media, the freedom of speech. They don't allow religion. Their economy is almost totally bankrupt. They have a problem. They can't even raise crops for themselves.
Now you're thinking of the Soviet Union now, are you?
I am.
Okay.
World communism supports world terrorism and the slaughter of innocents. It's been proven. When was the last time you saw a Soviet embassy held or a Soviet airliner blown up by terrorists? The forceful suppression of satellite countries. The last thing I'd like to see is Canada become...
What'd you say his name is?
This is Bob.
Bob who?
Well, we don't take last names, Bill.
I'd like to know, out of curiosity.
No, we don't take last names unless...
You sure he didn't get this from the RCMP?
Unless the caller wants to do it. Okay, so what you're saying then is because he's attacking you...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just curious because I've had this kind of stuff before, and I'm just curious to
know. Is any of...
I tracked down some of it before, and they were RCMP agents.
Is that right?
Right.
Okay, are you an RCMP agent, Bob?
I'm afraid not.
Are you a member of the CIA?
No, I am not.
Okay. Well, what do you think, Mr. Cashdan, then, talking about the...
Well, he's asking questions about another country. Apparently, he doesn't like the Soviet Union. But he's also distorting the truth, because when he speaks, first of all, of terrorism, the country that operates state terrorism is the United States of America, and there are all sorts of examples throughout the world to illustrate
that. Can you give us one example of American state terrorism?
Yes. I can give it to you in Chile, where they're responsible for the overthrow of the Allende government.
Mm-hmm.
I can give it to you by the assassination of Mr. Lumumba, who one of the leading spokesmen of the African people. I can give it to you in terms of the actions undertaken against Libya. I can give it to you in the actions undertaken against Vietnam. I can go on and on and on to illustrate that. And I can give it to you by the decision of the President of the United States and supported by others in the United States that they will now supply arms and equipment in a greater way than ever before against the so-called Contras, counter-revolutionaries in Nicaragua and in other countries. Now, if this isn't state terrorism, what is state terrorism?
What do you think of all that, Bob? Quite a litany he's presented there.
That is quite a litany, I think.
And I suppose you don't think this is true, eh?
Oh, I believe that...
You think it is true?
I believe some of it might be true.
Well, why don't you say so? Why don't you start off your description of the world by pointing to the United States as the main source of problems of the people of the world?
Yes, but the leader of the Democratic Party of the United States isn't sitting in the phone booth. You are, sir, and you're the one...
No, but President Reagan is speaking to the world every day, so you know what he's saying. Why don't you comment on that?
Frankly,
you want to cover up what the United States is doing.
It's typical of the Communist Party, the people who mouth their litanies and their slogans and their propaganda come back with quick answers and try and shift the blame, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'm not using propaganda. I'm stating facts, and you're not unable to rebuke these facts. And that's the truth, that for any honest-minded person who is listening to this
program. Anyone has something to hide, such as the Communist Party, like world domination, terrorism that they support. I haven't yet heard you refute the fact that the country of the Soviet Union, which is a communist country and has been for a long time, has problems keeping their own people fed.
And that's not true. Just a minute. You see, if we tell a lie, it needs to be refuted. First of all, the Soviet Union is not a communist country.
Anybody in a democratic
country
can become rich.
Anybody in our country can become rich. I'm glad that you say that, and I'll tell that to the unemployed of this country and to the young people who are out of work.
Okay, let's give the caller a chance here. Okay, last word to you, Bob.
Okay, if he's so hot on communism, I suggest that the gentleman should the communist country. That's where it belongs. It doesn't belong in this country at all. I would never support it.
I haven't asked for your support, and I wouldn't accept it if you gave it to me, sir.
I would forcibly, with arms... rebel against a communist...
Well, that's your privilege if you want to do that. And no one's advocating that you use arms or I use arms. So why are you using arms?
In the end, sir, I believe that you'd be better off somewhere behind the Iron Curtain instead of in front of it.
Well, I was born in Canada. I intend to live and die in Canada. My children and grandchildren are Canadians. They will live and die in this country. I don't know where you come from, but for what you say, you're close to a never-never position that doesn't correspond with the realities in the world today.
Bob, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you for your call. William Cashdan is the leader of the Communist Party of Canada. He's with us, as well as Bob Metz, the president of the Freedom Party here in Ontario. Radio 98, Ron, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, Ron.
I have a question for Bob Metz.
Okay.
Are you affiliated, or are you any way affiliated with the Nazi Party?
In no way whatsoever. Why would you ask?
Well, they have a way of disguising themselves, and I just wanted to know who we were talking to.
I agree with you. I think a lot of people who are out to control others always have to disguise their intentions.
Yeah.
That's why you'll find those groups of people most interested in suppressive attempts like censorship. Because, you know, when people are given the freedom to choose in their lives, they generally, for the most part, make the best choices for themselves, and they can tell the difference in the long term between rights and wrongs. And basically, one of the reasons that we are perceived as right-wing, which we are not, incidentally, is because of the way that we view the economy and the way we view an individual's right to property. You see, the basic thing that distinguishes communism from fascism, and they're really the same because they're both dictatorships, the thing that distinguishes the two systems from each other is the manner in which they regard property. Both systems deny the individual the right to property, but in a different way. Under a communist system, the state, quote, collectively owns the property and controls it and tells everyone what to do with it. Under fascism, and I know these are strong words and that they may offend some
Well,
people.
We're going to get a comment from Mr. Cashdan here
sure.
in a second, fire away.
Because the reason I'm using these words is because if you follow the policies behind what these words represent, you're going to end up in a state like that. But what I was going to say about fascism is that it allows people to, quote, own property. That is, your name is on the title deed, but you're not allowed to control that property. In other words, you're responsible for the property, but someone else is telling you what to do with it.
Okay, let's hold it there. Bill Cashdan.
Well,
is it true what he says?
No, it's completely stupid. Pardon the expression, upside down, as simplistic thinking. There's no relationship between fascism and communism.
Germany a national socialist state?
That the Soviet Union, the United States, Canada, Great Britain, and other countries united to destroy fascism, and it's well that they did so. And the Soviet Union paid 20 million lives in order to ensure that fascism would never dominate the world.
Okay, but let's talk about...
also not true about property, because under fascism, the rich continued to own the properties in Germany, and they would continue to own property and wealth in the banks if fascism were to operate in Canada. Under a socialist state, the banks and the multinational corporations and others would be under public ownership. But property, private, that is individual property, a house, a car, things of that kind would be remain the rights of people. In the Soviet Union, the trains don't are not operated by the corporations. In Canada, they are operated by the corporations. The people don't own the railways. They pay taxes for deficits, but they don't own the railways, individuals. So it's an incorrect statement to say that in terms of property relations, there is an affinity between fascism and communism. Fascism represents the most reactionary sectors of monopoly. And it's good that they were destroyed. And there are such tendencies in the United States also, unfortunately, today.
Okay. Well, now, you see, the distinction Mr. Kashin was trying to make was between property, personal property, and productive property. That is the basic thing. Productive property is the most important thing to have in the hands of private.
The people don't own productive property in this country. Who owns everything in this country? The people? What are you talking about?
It depends on whose property you're talking about. If you're talking about...
I'm talking about all the wealth in this country in terms of corporations. Who owns it? The people?
Whoever the shareholders of the people? Banks and corporations aren't entities that exist from outer space.
No.
They're comprised of they're little democracies of their own. They are groups of people who get together, who buy shares, who invest their little capital, which could be their house.
They don't decide. They don't decide the questions. That's been well established.
You ever heard of a shareholders meeting?
I've heard of shareholders, yes, but it's been well established by critics of the capitalist supporters themselves who draw attention to the fact that the fact that individual shareholders may own shares does not give them the control of
these corporations. Well, not necessarily. No, it's indirect because they vote.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Who controls makes the decisions. Not if you own a share or I own a share. We don't make decisions.
But see, the country's not made up just of corporations. It's made up of many small businesses. And other countries have large corporations.
Well, these small businesses...
Which is why you should be free trade, so that large corporations...
these small businesses, if you study bankruptcies, you'll see that is the small businesses that are being bankrupted every day of the year.
I don't deny that there's bankruptcies.
There's the corporations that become stronger and bigger every year.
Here's an interesting point. Part of the essential workings, aren't we all? Part of the essential workings of the free enterprise system, and this is the thing that scares people to death, but it's, believe it or not, it's having the right to fail. You can't subsidize things that are non-efficient in a society where competition leads the way. When a person fails in a business, and I've done this before, I've lost money.
But what you're saying, you see, in fact,
I've lost thousands.
In fact, behind all the generalities you're declaring is that what you're saying is that the corporations have the right to become bigger, stronger, and make the decisions for this country, because they're the ones that make the decisions for this government.
They make decisions for
not you and I.
They make decisions for the products they sell and how they sell them and who they're going to sell them to, and the people that buy those products, who buy them voluntarily, nobody's holding a gun on their head, that's where they get their power from. They get their power from the voluntary consent of their market.
During the commercial breaks, Kashtan and his campaign manager vented their anger and frustration on McLean for having booked Metz opposite him. Metz was too politically naive for their liking. He had no government programs they could criticize, and he did not understand political economy, they argued. It was beyond their understanding that Metz was, in effect, opposed to any concept of political economy at all. It was a free economy that Metz was arguing in favor of. They would have preferred to debate someone from the traditional parties in power who, ironically, shared their viewpoint that government has an important role to play in manipulating national economies.
Go ahead, please. You're next on the hotline.
First of all, Wayne, I do not like Mr. Trashcan's attitude.
This is Kashtan. Unless you're being facetious, are you?
Being facetious.
Okay.
Your first caller expressed my views totally.
Okay, what's wrong with what he says?
Well, if his countries, or the communist countries, are so great, why is he living in Canada?
I didn't speak about these other countries. Another gentleman by the name of Bob spoke about them.
What country are you from, sir?
I'm born here. I don't know. What country are you from?
I'm a good, true Canadian.
How do I know that is so?
I'm going to be that way, and I'm sick and tired of having
all the outsiders
on our government and our people. We have so many elements of, well, unrest, as far as I'm concerned, that are invading our...
Who's invading your country? Am I invading you?
Well, I don't like your attitude at all.
Well, what attitude don't you like? I've enunciated a position
in which I've said that
I believe that the next stage of development for our country, Canada, is to strengthen the its independence and prevent it from being taken over by the United States. And
the way in which it can be taken over by the United States.
Well, then you're living in a different world than I am, because this is of great concern to Canadians generally, as you can see if you read the press and listen to TV and the radio.
I follow it quite.
Well, I don't think you do, really, and with all due regards to what you're saying, I don't think so, because you're not knowledgeable of what's actually happening in Canada.
I think I am, sir, and my knowledge of too many people coming into Canada from other countries, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, then you're speaking of immigrants. You don't like immigrants coming to Canada.
Opening the gates when we have so many people unemployed.
Well, that's a different business. So that's what you should debate and discuss instead of saying that you don't like me and you want me to go somewhere else. I just don't like your attitude.
I don't know you as a person, so how?
Well, I don't know. You don't like my attitude when you haven't heard what I had to say.
Well, your first caller hit the nail on the head when he said.
What did he say?
If you don't like our ways, go back to your own country.
But he's from Canada, though, caller. Born in Canada. Where were you born?
Go back to his original ancestry then, or something.
Should go back to Montreal. Well, really, Miss or Mrs., you probably represent those elements of society that are living in a never-never world, who think that racism and discrimination and inequality and poverty is the way things should be.
And there should be no rights for women.
Okay, let's give it for everybody.
That's not what you're saying at all.
Okay, let's give the caller a chance to express herself, Bill.
I think I've expressed all my views on this subject, and I think your man is a little bit off base, too.
George, you're on the air.
Hello. I didn't want to direct a couple comments and questions toward the communist leader, Mr. Castris.
It's Kashtan, and he's listening. What's your first comment or question?
I was just wondering, could this program be allowed on the air if Mr. Castris was Prime Minister or the General Secretary of Canada?
Okay, that's fair,
Paul. Yes, it would be allowed. It would be allowed, yes, certainly.
And I could come on and take a strip out of your government?
You could if you wanted to.
Okay.
Okay. And then another thing. All I've heard is the lies from the communist leader, Mr. Castris.
Kashtan, first of all.
What's your name, by the way?
George.
This is George.
How do you pronounce George?
George?
Yeah, how do you pronounce it?
George.
Is it George or Georgie?
Okay, what you say...
Usually people are polite when they address each other.
Okay.
Yes, and if you're not polite, then you shouldn't address me.
Okay.
You say that Bill has lied.
Okay.
Can you be specific?
Okay, for example, he said that capitalism is on its last legs. That is a bunch of bull. I don't know if that's allowed on the air, but it is.
Well, you just said it, so go ahead.
Economic situation. For example, capitalism and communism, say North Korea and South Korea. North Korea, the people are practically starving in it. South Korea is one of the strongest economic powers on the world today. There's a perfect situation between capitalism and communism. And then, let's see, another situation. He said that Russia is able to feed all its people. It isn't. We're shipping them all kinds of wheat and grains and corn.
Most of it is fodder for cattle.
Sure it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they feed grain. They feed wheat to their cows. That's interesting. Their cows must be pretty rich.
That's right, they are. They're quite fat.
The thing that he does bring up, though, Bill, that I find interesting in what you did say earlier about capitalism being on its last legs, surely, though, you must recognize that, as you probably know, we're in a tremendous economic upswing in light of the 81-82 recession.
That's a recovery of a kind.
Unemployment is lower in the U.S. It's come down slightly in Canada, as you know. Inflation is very low in both countries.
Yeah.
Consumer spending has been increasing a great deal since 82. The stock market has just roared since 82. So,
but these are temporary phenomena. We had this before, didn't we? We had this before. And if you were to speak that way in 78, 79, you would make the same statement. And then we had the 80, 82 or thereabouts serious decline, a deep recession.
Mm-hmm.
And in my view, we're entering shortly into another deep recession.
Well, what's happened?
Because as the nature of, say, capitalism, it can't operate except through busts and booms.
If I may address that, Wayne. This part of this cycle of capitalism that Mr. Cashin is referring to is a great source of fear to him and socialists of all stripes. Yes, the highs and the lows are part of the capitalist system, because, for example, when you begin a market, and let's suppose you start supplying widgets for a particular market, and you end up accomplishing your task, you reach your goal, and then there's an oversupply of widgets on the market. Naturally, there's going to be a regression in the demand for it, and people who are employed in the widget industry will soon find that they've got to look elsewhere for jobs where new demands are coming about.
And the point quickly?
The point is that when we go through a lower period or a slight depression or a recession, that is an adjustment period that should be left alone by governments so that people can decide where their resources will be best used. What happens is, can you imagine back in the days of the horse and buggy, if the government decided to protect the horse and buggy industry with the advent of the car coming on?
Well, I think the 1929 crash shows that free enterprise is unable to cope with the problems of crises in the capitalist system. And the crisis of 29 opened the door to the emergence of fascism and to the Second World War. We know that by history. Now, we speak about recovery at the present time. There is a recovery, but it's a recovery of a kind which at the same time allows unemployment to continue and even grow higher.
Okay, real fast.
Once again, Mr. Cashin is blaming capitalism for the failures of the things that he's promoting. What happened in 1929 was government intervention. It created a credit situation prior to the period 1929 that was way too big for what the market was telling them it should be.
Okay, let's pick it up off the end of the news.
Okay.
Hold your thought. We have messages, and our telephone number is 433. It's my guests this morning, William Cashdan, who is the leader of the Communist Party of Canada, and Robert Metz, who is the president of the Freedom Party of Ontario. I'm enjoying this because we're getting some diverse points of view here. Just before we broke, both Bill and Bob were discussing economic dislocation, recession, and that sort of thing. And Bill talked about the crash in 1929, which he feels shows the deplorable state of capitalism. Bob, you were trying to make a point about the 29 crash, stating that it was government intervention that in your view caused that to happen.
Exactly.
Could you expand just a little bit?
Certainly. Well, what the government of the time was trying to do, they were riding a real economic high. And when people get high on anything, they kind of like it. And they want to stay there if they can. So what the government was trying to do, it thought it could stabilize the system. Have we heard that somewhere before? The stabilization of a system. And so what they did, the Federal Reserve System ended up giving too much credit to people at a time when the marketplace was telling them otherwise. This might have been politically popular at the time, but the disaster it created was self-evident. Now, what happens is, when you're creating artificially low interest rates, there's somebody on the other end lending this money out. Could be a small investor, could be a large bank, could be a corporation, it doesn't matter. But when they're not getting the return on their money that they think they're owed, they're going to want their money back. And that's what happened. Loans were recalled, people wanted their money back because the government wasn't giving them what it was worth. And then the money disappeared from the system and the whole system collapsed.